way of thinking, right? Rather than you're just studying the book and memorizing and, you know, getting familiar with it and getting knowledge of the book, is you're trying to develop a method of thinking and observing and contemplation and all that.
There's a nice quote in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, and that the Prabhupada says that study of Gita is not for conscious speculators, it's for transformation of character.
So it's emphasis is on that, because we ran into some problem that what's his name? Janmashtami. He didn't mention it, but Pancharatna mentioned it. That he was feeling if we were doing Bhakti Shastri, then what would be the need of him doing Bhakti Shastri? You know, so he's feeling there should be more coordination, you know, and all these things. But I was pointing out to him is that it's a different approach. It's a different kind of approach. It means he'll go through and study, you know, the various books, and you have a course on, you know, the Dasamula, and another course on, you know, something else, you know, like this, but we're doing basically the same thing, but probably more slowly over a longer period of time, and trying to see it in relationship to a kind of, you know, a bigger package, basically the Sambandhavideya Prayojana. Kind of
thing. Nirguna study.
Nirguna.
Yeah, the one that Janmashtami comes on the Rajasi. It's interesting. It's in the Bhagavad Mahatmya, he gives different kinds of hearers, eight different kinds of hearers, which is very interesting. Made more sense of my class members by reading that.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, and then the other was into ways of study, like how you hear. And that was actually four groups, the 3 months of Nirguna. Nirguna is where you have no preoccupation with time or getting certificates, but you actually just want to develop vajras.
I would go on as we do and not bother with certificates, but I've noticed that we get a lot of trouble for that. Basically, our last class school was closed because it was felt that it wasn't systematic. Though, according to, you know, the Vedic system, it's, you know, quite systematic, but whatever, you know, it's a different kind of thinking. So then we'll give ones, but we'll base it on what Prabhupada gave and what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He had, you ever seen those, the Acharya exams?
No.
Yeah, there's 10 exams, very deep, very, it's like I've heard the maximum anyone's ever done in one lifetime was Tirthamaraja did 3. So a very in-depth study. So you can see from going through it that Prabhupada based R1 off of that. So then we'll have these as side things, so it's kind of like, you know, and we'll have put as much information. The thing is we want to take it from Vedic sources. You know, that this is the breakdown of the subject, rather than a modern breakdown. Because they want to see breakdowns and, you know, different things. And you're going to do this for this long, so many hours a day, so many weeks, like this kind of thing. So it's like if we can break it down, we won't necessarily break it as much. We'll break it into lessons or, you know, just, but the lesson may be one class or maybe many classes. You know, that's, but at least then it looks systematic, and then if they get, you know, a piece of paper after finishing it, but it'll be in connection with Vedic levels of study. You know, all these, you know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, you're like, you have Shastri, you have Acharya, you have, what other titles are there?
Associated Buddhist titles, they're asking.
Oh, yeah. So there's all kinds of titles.
There's one title called Anuchana. I just found it in the...
I heard that one. That one we'll have to... it's a bigger one.
That's what's so funny about Dr. Shastri degree, they have an ISKCON. If you talk to the pundits outside, and Dr. Shastri is something really, you know...
Yeah, well, Shastri is a big... Some people only have two, Shastri and Acharya. So Shastri means you know know it very well. You're very knowledgeable. Acharya, you've done very deep, deep study. So they expect, you know, Acharya, you know, you'd probably, you know, speak it in Sanskrit or something. So it's like we're trying to get this a blend or a balance between, you know, just the straight Vedic, which then will both be seen as, you know, academically strong, but at the same time as, you know, not necessarily as devotional.
You need the first song.
Uh-huh.
The first song is missing the intellectual. Shri Krishna Jadeva, would you be there? There's instruction to it. This is the Bulyata one only.
Yeah, that was a problem.
But then we copied so many of them that we don't have. Can you put... Can you put those books... Oh, no, there's another one of these tables in the kitchen. Just bring that, put those books on there and give me that one, because this doesn't look close.
Put it twice.
Uh-huh.
Or you put it twice. First song.
Which one?
The first song is twice inside. Mm-hmm. Here and the next page.
Bulia Kamari, that's the first song?
Yeah. It's the first song, but it's not the introduction song. There's the introduction.
Where is the introduction song?
It's not here.
Oh, I see. Instead of putting the introduction, they put the
first song.
First song. Too many times. So we're trying to get a mix of that and that, and then, you know, the Gaudiya flavor. Mm. But going deeply into that, but then not looking like, you know. And put that one over there. And put all those books on top. And then give me this thing. You know, so it's a balance between not looking like a South Indian Smarta, or a Gaudiya Vaishnav Babaji or Gaudiya Mat. At the same time, it, you know, making it so that it's, you know, palatable. Yeah, you know. In the ISKCON circles. But at the same time, is that it looks, you know, traditional, authentic, and you know, that it's you know, a serious study. Yeah.
So the Bhakti
Shastri
will go on at the same time as the
Bhagavatam. There'll be two classes in the day that'll be connected with the with whatever courses someone's taking, and then the evening class, which would be like this time, that would be Bhagavatam. It's just study the Bhagavatam itself. It's not connected with a course. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not connected with a course. So in other words, any level can be discussed at that time. The whole thing, the idea is that you start to see the connection between the Bhagavatam and all the subjects, like that. And different people can speak, and like that. So it should be. And that way then, there's, you know, certain, that's one class that everybody goes to, all the students go to, no matter what they're taking or anything. And if they are more advanced and they have more to add, you know, rather than, you know, we've studied so many things, so therefore, why would we go to this one? You know, it would be, then they would be the ones to be able to add. So we'll try it. I mean, it's one of those things that may work or may not work. But the idea is to train them in the character and in the subject matter and the application. And then as a side thing, because it seems to be, you know, it's a tradition to do it, but also it's very popular these days, then there'd be some kind of degrees connected with all the levels. And there'd probably be a huge amount of degrees that one could get. You know, that way then it'll be felt that
every second degree.
Yeah. No, but I mean, there's so many things you could get, you know, and then combinations. You do one part of it, it's one thing, another part's that one. And when you have a bigger part, that would be another level. And then there's, and things beyond that and like that. So it's basically combining three systems, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave, then what Prabhupada gave, and then what are traditionally used in the, you know, Sanskrit or Vedic educational world in India. What are the titles and expectations of a certain level? So that about three together, and you should at least, you know, they should be happy with what we have. Next thing is whether we can do it. That's another thing. That's a different topic. Harihi Om
Sanavatu Sanabhunaktu Sahavilyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavati Tamastumavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gauratra Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Two, huh? Is it? This is Lofa, huh? You know Lofa?
Yeah.
Okay. Bhuliya tomare samsare ashiya pena na bidha vyata
Bhuliya tomare samsare ashiya pena na bidha vyata
Tomaracharane asiyachi ami bolibo dukera katha
Tomaracharane asiyachi ami bolibo dukera katha
Janani jathare chilama jakona dishama bandana Ekpara Prabhu Dekha Diya More Bonchile Edina Dase
Ekpara Prabhu Dekha Diya More Bonchile Edina Dase
Thakona Bhavinu Janama Paiya Koribo Bhajana Thava Janama hoilo, hori maya jale, nahailo jnana labha.
Janama hoilo, hori maya jale, nahailo jnana labha.
Adhaire rachele, swanera kole, ashiya katanu kala.
Adhare rachele, swanera kole, ashiya katanu kala.
Janaka janani, snehecha buliya, samsara lagilo bhalo.
Janani snehete buliya samsara lagiyo bhalo
krame dina dina balaka hoiya kelinu balaka saha
krame dina dina Balaka hoiya Kirimba rakasa
Ara kichu dine Jnana upa jilo Pata pori ahar ahar
Ara kichu dine Jnana upa jilo Pata pori ahar
Vidyarago rave, bhomi deshe deshe, dhana uparjana kori.
Vidyarago rave, bhomi deshe deshe, dhana uparjana kori.
Swajana palana, kori ekamane, bulinu tomare hari.
Sajana palana kore ekamane bulina tomare hari
Bhardhakye ekonna bhaktakti vinoda kandiya katara pati
Bhardhakye ekonna bhaktakti vinoda kandiya katara pati
Nabojiya tore dina vritta gelo ekona ki habe gati
Nabojiya tore dina vritta gelo ekona ki habe gati
Bulya tomare samsare ashiya peye nana vidha gata
Tomare samsare ashiya peye nana vidha gata
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
I forsook you, my Lord, and came to this world of pain and sorrow. Now I submit my tale of woe at your lotus feet. While still in the unbearable fetters of my mother's womb, I saw you before me. You revealed yourself but briefly, and then abandoned this poor servant of yours. At that moment I swore to worship you after taking birth. But birth came, and with it the network of worldly illusion, which robbed me of all good sense. As a fondled son in the lap of relatives, I passed my time smiling and laughing. My parents' affection helped me to forget the pangs of birth, and I thought the world very nice. Day by day I grew and soon began playing with other boys. Shortly my powers of understanding emerged. I read and studied my lessons incessantly. Traveling from place to place, proud of my education, I grew wealthy and maintained my family with undivided attention. O Lord Hari, I forgot you. Now in old age, Bhaktivinoda is sad. He weeps. I failed to worship you, O Lord, and instead passed my life in vain. What will be my fate now? So this is Dhanya. Dhanya, humility. So in the devotional process, that one needs to be able to understand this principle of humility. Is that that's the whole process is actually founded on that. Because the coming to the material world is based on the opposite. We're proud, we're thinking I am God. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the most amazing thing is that the smallest thinks they're the biggest. Right? The living entity is the smallest, the jiva. But he thinks he's God, he's the complete whole. So that is the difficulty. So when humility is there, we understand we're servant and not Lord. So it's a very essential aspect of the devotional process. So then here he's telling how this was gone through, how this happened, is that while in the womb, then we see the Lord, but then we say we'll serve, but birth makes us forget, and then all the relatives, and they are very happy with us, and saying we're so wonderful, and playing, and feeding, and taking care. So then we think that the place is not so bad. Then after that, growing up, playing with other children, and playing becomes very fun, and that. And then we go to school, we study, and then from that study we become proud, and with that pride, then we go and we try to develop our good fortune, our wealth. And so then that is done. So we see is that at all times, the focus is there. Focus on the relatives, focus on the friends, focus on the education, focus on the family maintenance. So this is, the focus is there. And the point is he forgot the Lord. So we forget the Lord in this condition. So he's saying now in old age, then we are sad, because everything's gone. I mean, what's happened is that all these things go away. Then you realize that something is missing, because we've put all of our faith in these things, our education, our health, our wealth, our family, our position, And then when that all starts to go with age, then we start to understand that there's something more, because all the things we've worked to, because work should get a goal. And as we work, and then we thought we got the goal, but that wasn't. The goal is coming later, when one gets old and everything's finished. So that's the result. So then one thinks, then the work I did wasn't good. Right? So then naturally then one thinks, I should have worshipped the Lord. So that direction is good. That means one, there's humility. If one has performed material activities, understood that I'm not getting good result, and then taking up the worship of the Lord, that's considered proper. But if one is performing devotional service, expecting it will create material well-being, which it does, but if that's our goal, then when we don't get it, then we become disappointed, and we think this process of devotional service doesn't work, it didn't make me prosperous. So then one gives that up, but that's the opposite, that's through the false ego. Because then you think, all these things are valuable. I am the body, I am the mind. Generally it's more comes on that platform. I am the mind. What I think, what I want, this is very important. Like that. So then it's here. So he's saying, what will be my fate now?
Hmm.
Anything else on some of the we'll bring it up here. So, this book here is the Jiva Dharma. That it means the actual glorious Dharma. You know, it means the Dharma that actually comes out victorious. So that's the eternal relationship or eternal Dharma of the soul. So the Jiva Dharma is actually a study in what is the nature of the soul, what is the relationship of the soul with the Lord. You know, who is the soul? What is the relationship in the material world with the Lord? Then how to act in that? How do you deal with the material world? You know, how do you understand yourself and all that you have with you? You know, the subtle, gross body, the subtle body. Then even more subtle, there's what's called the causal body. Or the polluted consciousness, the desire the causal body then creates either the material or the spiritual body. It means the existence, actually. It's better to say that. The causal body creates spiritual and material existence. Right? Then, as a product of that, then you have in the material world the subtle body, which then creates the gross body. Right? So if you want to enjoy separately from Krishna, then that creates the subtle body, which then creates the gross body. If you want to serve Krishna, then that creates the spiritual body. And then one serves from there. So this describes then, you know, all different aspects of the essence of the Vaishnava philosophy.
Like that.
So here, chapter 1, the soul's eternal and temporary natures. Jivara nitya o naimitika dharma. Means what is his eternal and temporary duties. So from the text. Of all earthly realms, Jambudvip is the best of all places in Jambudvip. Is the best. Aha, I see. Of all earthly realms, Jambudvip is the best. Of all places in Jambudvip, Bharatvarsha is the best. Of all places in Bharatvarsha, Gaudadesh is the best. Of all places in Gaudadesh, Sri Navadvip Mandal is the best. In one part of Sri Navadvip Mandal, on the Ganga shore, the beautiful village of Sri Godrum is splendidly manifested eternally. In ancient times, many Bhajananandi devotees made their homes in the gardens of Sri Godruma. So this is setting the scene that in the whole of all the earthly realms, because there's so many earthly realms. You have the seven islands, and on each of those there's humans. Though this one is what we know of as just the human that's balanced. And from here the humans create karma and suffer karma. Like that. But all those other realms of human beings, the other six items, they're only enjoying the fruits of their previous karma. So those ones are not as high. They're called Boma Swarg. Is that they're not, you know, there's not enough piety to put you on the heavenly planets, but it's more piety than you would have on the earthly planet. Well, here as we know it. In Bharatvarsha, like that. So, of all these places, then Bharatvarsha is the best, because here then you can create new direction, new karma. And so the idea is then you can create here the ability to go back to Godhead. On the other planets, generally you'll just enjoy the fruits of what you've already done. And then on this earth, then India is the best. Bharatvarsha, meaning the places which they're following, you know, in the Vedic in the proper Vedic literature. So Bharata Varshini would be those who are following the, you know, the place or footsteps of Bharata Maharaj. You know, in other words, the proper culture, a proper etiquette. And in that, then Gaudadesh is the best. Because in Gaudadesh is where all the Lord performed his pastimes, all his devotees appeared. And then of that, then within that, the Navadvipa Mandala, because that's specifically the Dham, the Lord's Dham. It closes the door a little bit, you know, not completely, but if somebody else comes, I know.
Oh, the windows are open. Is it?
No, they're closed.
Oh, closed.
Yeah. So then, yeah, where the Lord's pastimes are manifest. Then within that, then here he's saying within that, then there's the island of Godrum, the village of Godrum, where the chanting of the holy name is the prominent process. In that place, in a cottage of vines, a Sarabi cow once worshipped Lord Gaurasundar, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not far from that place was a bhajan kutir named Parjumna Kunj. In that bhajan kutir, thick with vines, a Paramahamsa Babaji, who was an initiated disciple of the Supreme Lord's personal associate, Pujumna Brahmacharya, always stayed, wrapped in the bliss of worshipping the Lord, bhajan. Aware that Sri Godruma is non-different from Sri Nandagaon in Vrindavan, Sri Prem Das Babaji, who was learned in all the scriptures, also took shelter in that holy place. Every day he chanted Lord Hari's holy names 200,000 times. Every day he offered hundreds and hundreds of dandavat obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. He maintained his life by madhukari, begging at the homes of the cowherd people there. He strictly followed the rules of a saintly life. When he had finished all his spiritual duties, he would not waste his time with gossip. Rather, he would read, with tears in his eyes, the Prema Vivarta of Lord Gaurasundar's dear associate, Jagannanda Pandit. At those times, the devotees in that forest grove would listen with love and devotion. And why not? The book Prema Vivarta is full of the sweet mellows, rasas of devotional service. Also, this Babaji read it so sweetly that hearing its words at once extinguished whatever remained of the poison, fire of material desires in the hearts of the devotees. So we see he's very learned, he's taken shelter here, he's chanting, you know, 200,000 names, that means 2 lakhs, and, or how you say, 128 rounds. So then, that he's very humble, he's offering his obeisance to all the Vaishnava devotees, and he would maintain himself by begging. So we see he's living in a very holy place, and he's performing a very, very spiritual lifestyle. Since he finished his duties, then he would, his spiritual duties, in other words, chanting his names and his scheduled duties, and then the balance time he wouldn't waste his time with just talking and gossiping. The tendency is that sometimes one studies so much or one performs, you know, very serious bhajan, very serious sadhana, then the tendency is the mind becomes restless. So then after, then you want to do something, you know, frivolous to kind of balance that. What we see here is that it's described that this Babaji, he did not do that. When he would finish, then he would sit down and listen to the Prema Vivarta. This is the natural balance. Right? It means someone wants taste. That's the whole idea. Is that by studying in sadhana, then if one is very elevated, then one will get a taste from that. That itself is the taste. And so one goes out, we see the Karyas Thakur, just always chanting, always. But if one is a sadhaka, then these things, they're very inspiring, and they focus and they're purifying and they develop taste, but they themselves, one may not have so much taste from them. So then the mind may find some, you know, that rigidity that is there due to sadhana. Or it may find, yeah, so it wants to do something to get some taste. Mind needs taste, that's the thing. Mind needs the taste. Intelligence needs logic, and the senses are connected to the intelligence. Therefore, the senses can also be engaged in a very, you know, logical way. So sadhana bhakti means taking the senses and engaging them in the Lord's service. Yeah. So then we see that after that, then the tendency is then to want to use the senses in something that gives us taste. You know, our conditioned nature. So that is what we have to watch out for. That's what's being pointed out here at this point. I mean, by this example of the Babaji, is that he is not doing, for him, taste then means more of the same. But he's picking those literatures which, you know, give a nice, they're very attractive. Very attractive. Like we may study Gita, and so that will give us proper knowledge, proper understanding. And so its purpose is to engage the intelligence so that we understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, inspire us to do the proper things. But we see then by hearing Bhagavatam or Krishna book or, you know, these various stories about the Acharyas, so Prema Vyuartas and by Jagannanda Pandit is pastimes of the Lord and his relationship with the devotees and, you know, his personal realizations. You know, written in the what's called the Champu style. Champu means it doesn't necessarily have to follow any particular system. It's just what comes to mind can be written about. Like that. So you write about this and then you write about that. Though each thing that you're writing about is complete in itself, but then it may connect, it may means there is a, you know, a logic to it, but at the same time it's more the logic that the mind uses rather than a logical presentation. So these things are very sweet, and so here it mentions full of rasa. So he's gaining rasa from that. He's gaining taste from that. So then we find that this is the natural balance. Is after a day of, you know, sadhana and its study and other very rigid activities, then discussing and studying literatures that are full of rasa, like the Srimad Bhagavatam and those literatures by the Acharyas, the Goswamis, that are in pursuance of that. You know, like this book. This is also one such. But basically anything that the Acharyas wrote, you know, unless they were writing on, you know, grammar or, you know, some other strictly Vedic subject, then it was all Bhagavatam, and it's all full of rasa. Understood? Anything on that? Or? So now, so that sets the scene, and who is this Premdas Babaji? So now then the story starts. One afternoon, when he had finished the chanting of all his rounds, the Paramahamsa Babaji sat down in his Madhavi vine-covered cottage and read from Prema Vivarta. As he read, he became plunged in the ocean of devotional love. At that moment, an austere sannyasi approached him and again offered dandavat obeisances at his feet. Plunged in devotional bliss, the Babaji was for a moment unaware of external events. Finally, seeing the sannyasi prostrate before him, the Babaji, who was more humble than a blade of grass, at once bowed down to greet him, saying, "O Lord Chaitanya, O Lord Nityananda, please be merciful upon me, a fallen soul." The Babaji began to weep. And so, even though he is, Babaji means sannyas, but its position is generally, it's beyond the varnashram. So in one state, if one is Babaji by qualification rather than just by activity, or no, you can't separate them really, but by practice, if it's a matter of realization, then it's considered even beyond the Trigandhi sannyas. So then, in that way, then you could say that I wouldn't, why I'll offer my obeisances to the sannyasi who's in a lower order. But at the same time, it's the nature of Babaji means that one is beyond that consideration. Someone who considers like that should act within Varnashram. And someone who's beyond that, then their humility, so therefore then they offer obeisances. Like that.
I also heard that his name was Premdas Babaji. And Gaudiya Premdas Guru was saying that the essential quality of one who has Prem is after him.
Mm.
So it's interesting his Babaji is called him Prem.
Then the sannyasi said to the saintly Babaji, "O Master, I am very lowly and fallen. Why, imitating my actions, do you mock me in this way?" Then, taking the dust of the Babaji's feet, the sannyasi sat down before him, giving the sannyasi a tree bark sitting place, and then sitting beside him, the Babaji, his words choked with spiritual love, said, "O Master, I am a fallen soul. How may I serve you?" Setting down his kamandalu, the regal sannyasi respectfully folded his hands and said, "O Master, I am very unfortunate. I studied the Shankhya, Patanjali, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Purvimimamsa, and Uttaramimamsa philosophies. I studied the Vedanta, Upanishads, and many other scriptures also. I traveled on pilgrimage to Varanasi and many other holy places. I spent much time debating with others the meaning of the scriptures. It is 12 years now since I accepted a sannyasdanda from Srila Satchidananda Saraswati Pad. After I accepted the danda, I spent my time always traveling to all the holy places. Wherever I went in Bharatvarsha, I always associated with the sannyasi followers of Shankaracharya, passing through the stages of Kutichak, Bahudak, and Hamsa. After a few days, I attained the stage of Paramahamsa, then I stayed always at Varanasi. Observing a vow of silence, I took shelter of the sayings, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, Pragyanam Brahma, Brahma, Brahman is consciousness, and Tattvamasi, you are that, which Shankara declares are the Mahavakyas, most important statements of the scriptures. Then one day a saintly Vaishnav, singing songs about Lord Hari's pastimes, came before me, opening my eyes wide. I gazed at him. He was bathed by the tears flowing from his eyes, and the hairs of his body stood erect in ecstasy. In a choked voice he chanted, "Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda," again and again. He danced with faltering steps. Sometimes he fell to the ground. As I gazed at him and heard his song, my heart became filled with love. A love I have no power to describe. Even though I became filled with love, I followed the rules of Paramahamsa life and did not speak a word to him. I am pathetic. My rules of Paramahamsa life are pathetic. And my so-called good fortune is also pathetic. Why did I not speak to him? Since that day, my heart has been incessantly drawn to the feet of Sri Chaitanya. I became very agitated. I spent many days searching for that Vaishnava, but I did not see him anywhere. When I saw that Vaishnava and heard the holy names from his mouth, I became filled with a pure and sacred bliss. Before that time, I did not know that such a bliss existed anywhere. I did not think it was possible for a human being to experience such bliss. After some days of thinking, I decided that it would be best for me to take shelter at the feet of a Vaishnava. Then I left Varanasi and went to Sridhar Vrindavan. So, here we see that he became very advanced in his sadhana of Shankara. He studied well. He studied all the different mimamsas and all the different Vedic literatures, the Upanishads and their meanings. So he became greatly learned. Also mentioned that he regal. We see always in his movements and everything, very regal. So we can understand he's from a very elevated, pious background, very high class, high grade background. So, you know, his movements are very proper. Everything is very, you know, wonderful. But he's living such a pious life, but the goal is impersonalism. So all these so-called Mahavakyas, the Shankaracharya. Then meditating on those, chanting those various mantras and studying that way, then, you know, he became very advanced. But then when the Vaishnavas came and he saw their affection that they had for the Lord and their chanting and absorption in the Lord's, then he understood that there was something. He felt a happiness that was way beyond anything he had experienced. He had given up the mundane sense gratification, you know, considering that was useless. Then he took up the pursuit of Brahman. So in that, the happiness there is the happiness of no trouble. That's the happiness. Is that there's no problems. Right? Material life is a problem, so you get rid of all the problems, you'll be happy. Right? You're thinking, there's a problem there. If this problem would go away, then I'd be happy. So that's material happiness. We're not thinking, not this problem would go away. No, if just, you know, some very nice positive thing would be going on, then I'd be happy. But it's getting rid of a problem. You know? That's actually what's going on. You know? That there's the process is to get rid of material existence means the process of getting rid of problems. That's all it is. Like someone would say, no, I'm doing what I like. But that's the thing, is you're doing to get to a position that you like. You're hungry, so you're making an endeavor to feed yourself so you'll be full. Right? And then when you become full, you're happy. But what's full is being not hungry. Right? Full is not appreciated separately on its own. Right? Because afterwards your stomach is full, then you have a problem. Right? So now the next problem is how to digest it. So therefore you walk or you take medicine or you take a nap or you do so many different things. Then after you've done that, then you're hungry again. So the whole problem is the material world means problem. That's why it's called kunta. It's just, and the spiritual world is vaikunta, no problem. So that's what's going on. So he's experienced that lack of problem. Right? He's living here. Paramahamsa means there Paramahamsa. And the Shankara means he's done his studies, he's gone, he's debated, and that now he can sit down and just fully absorb himself and study all day. You know, he doesn't have to go here and there to keep his mind busy. He can just focus, study his Vedanta, do his meditation. So in this way for them it'll be called Paramahamsa. But it's not. It's actually Hamsa. So what they call is Hamsa, you know, then we would call as Parivrajakacharya. It's also known as Hamsa. But he's not really going beyond. So we would say Parivrajakacharya, then Hamsa would be the stage of liberation. Then Paramahamsa means beyond liberation, where he actually is enter into the spiritual realm of spiritual rasa. That would be them, that position. But for them, they don't have that. So they take it, Parivrajakacharya, as Hamsa. And then when you can actually sit and study all day and just do that, that is then called Paramahamsa. So we must understand that there's a difference here between their concept and ours. Like that. So he's gone to Vrindavan. Then I left Varanasi and went to Sridham Vrindavan. There I saw many Vaishnavas. Every one of them was calling out the names, O Sri Rupa, O Sri Sanatana, O Sri Jiva Goswami, and lamenting. They were all meditating on Sri Sri Radha Krishna's pastimes, and in voices choked with love, calling out the name of Navadvipa. From that moment I have yearned to see Navadvipa. After a 168-mile journey from Sri Vrajatam, I arrived in Mayapur a few days ago. In Mayapur town, I heard of your glories. So now I have come to take shelter of your feet. Please be merciful to me, accept me as your servant, and give my story an ending that is good. Weeping again and again, and humbly placing a blade of grass between his teeth, the saintly Paramahamsa said, O saintly sannyasi, I am very unfortunate. I fill my belly, I sleep, I speak useless gossip. In this way, I have wasted my life. Now I pass my days in the place where Sri Krishna Chaitanya enjoyed his pastimes. Still, I have no power to taste what is true love for Lord Krishna. You are fortunate. Gazing at a Vaishnava for a moment, you tasted that love. You have received the mercy of Lord Krishna Chaitanya. If, when you taste pure spiritual love, you once remember this fallen person, my life will be a great success. Speaking again and again in this way, the saintly Babaji tightly embraced the saintly sannyasi and bathed him with the tears flowing from his eyes. Touched by a Vaishnava, the saintly sannyasi felt an emotion he had never known before. He danced and wept. As he danced, he sang this verse. Glory to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, glory to Lord Nityananda, glory to my spiritual master, Sri Prem Das, glory to the bliss of devotional service. After a long time of chanting and dancing, the two of them talked about many things. Saintly Premdas Babaji humbly said, O great soul, please stay in this Prajumna Kunj for some days and purify me. The saintly sannyasi replies, I place my body in the service of your feet. What to speak of a few days? I will serve you to the end of my life. That is my wish. The saintly sannyasi was learned in all the scriptures. He knew well the spiritual benefit to be obtained by staying in the spiritual master's home and studying under his guidance. Therefore, he very happily stayed for some days in that forest grove. We see here this is also an example of, so much example of very nice spiritual exchange here, and great humility. We see humility on the materially pious platform is that here is the sannyasi, he's an older gentleman, and he has studied the scriptures, he has attained the top position available in his line of study. But he understands that serving under the spiritual master then is giving him good benefit. That is the best. So even though he's elderly, he's knowledgeable, he understands that beyond knowledge then there's the devotion. Like that. Knowledge is on the mundane platform is considered the best of all reasons to be respected. That's the best. It means you have someone may be famous, someone may be beautiful, someone may be wealthy or powerful, influential or knowledgeable. So of all of these, knowledgeable is the best. But then beyond knowledge, then there's devotion. So he's able to appreciate this. So even though he's come to the top position on the mundane platform, he understands that actually the principle of surrendering to the spiritual master, that applies. But now he's starting a new process. He's taking the process he's followed to the next stage. So therefore then, we can see the two flavors here between the two. One who is expert in the religion of this world and that, but also they know what the conclusions are. But they misapply the conclusions. They know what's the essence of the process, but then they misapply. That's the problem with them. After some days, the Paramahamsa Babaji said, O great soul, Sri Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur kindly keeps me at his feet. Today he is wrapped in the worship of Lord Nrisimha in the village of Devapali in the outskirts of Navadvip Mandal. When we have finished our Madhukari begging for alms, let us go and see him. The saintly sannyasi replied, as you order, so I shall do. So you see, you have a Paramahamsa that is surrendered to a Brahmachari. And then you have this highly elevated and knowledgeable and accomplished, Vedic sannyasi surrendering to the Paramahamsa. So you're getting it. You can see here is that one of the humility that is there based on actual understanding. You know, one is seeing the difference between material and spiritual, and the other is seeing the difference within spiritual. Like that. If there's any questions or stuff, it means just at any time you raise your hand and, you know, let's say something. Yes.
All right. This kind of practice of looking for the Brahman actually enter into the top level of goodness. They also enter into pure goodness. That's why their behavior is so regal, like you were saying.
The regalness actually comes from goodness. Like that. Like you see is the great kings and rishis, they also act in a very, you know, good way, like that. You know, good birth, good samskaras, good training. So that comes from goodness. Though there may be some mix. Pure goodness means that there's no material desire. So factually the Mayavadis can never, impersonalists can never be on the platform of pure goodness. Because even they come to the Brahman platform, they're not actually on the Brahman platform. Because they're wanting to be God, so they want to be the controller and enjoyer. But God doesn't want to be the controller and enjoyer, He is the controller and enjoyer. It's just the way it is. Like the fire doesn't want to be hot, it is hot. Water doesn't want to be wet, it is wet. It's just the nature. So us wanting to be, then that's a problem. So we're different than God. God is, you know, we have a tendency to just put in the same. But He's different. You know, He stands unique on His own. So therefore, because of their polluted consciousness, they're factually not actually in this platform of pure goodness. Though we will say they're situated in goodness, and they may even be situated on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. But there's a difference between the Brahma-Bhuta platform of an impersonalist who thinks I am Brahman, but, you know, identifies himself separately. Because if Brahman, but what kind of Brahman? That's the thing, is they don't know what kind of Brahman they are. They are Brahman. We're all Brahman. Everything's Brahman, but it's different kinds of Brahman. You know, material energy is also Brahman, but it's a Brahman that manifests temporarily. It's always present, but in shapes and forms, you know, with designations and names, that temporarily manifests. The elements themselves are always there. But that's temporary, that's Brahman. Then the soul is also Brahman, but they are servant Brahman. But when they're trying to be I am Brahman, they're thinking that I have merged with God. You know, so we're all Brahman. So it's the first step. They see that they are Brahman, but they don't know what kind of Brahman they are. They actually, when Brahman realized, they'd understand, I am servant. So the Brahman realization that we hear about in this material world is a material concept. It's not a concept from the spiritual world. No one in the spiritual world thinks like that. You know, they understand, I am servant. And servant Brahman, you know, and Krishna is Lord Brahman, right? But someone on the platform of only on Brahman realization, then can't tell the difference. The yogi can tell the difference that there is Lord Brahman and there is Jiva Brahman, you know, or a part of Brahman. But they haven't understood the relationship of service. Right? So they can distinguish between God and the living entity, but they don't understand service. So when they surrender and take up service, then they come to the next platform. Then they go to Bhagavan realization. Then they take up the mood of servant. Then they serve God and please Him in that way. So factually, their platform is not real. You know, just as this material world, the flickerings of this material world are not real. So in the same way as Brahman realization, in itself a goal, a means and a goal, is not real either. It doesn't exist.
The three modes of nature, even the high level of goodness, cannot go beyond the pradhana. So when we say that the yogi, the jnani, also they are transcendentalists. So they don't enter into the Suddha Sattva, but they are just obtaining the Brahman beyond the modes.
Basically, but the point is the conscience, they come to the platform of Vasudev. So the yogi comes to the platform of merging into the body of the Lord. The Brahmavanis come to the platform of Brahman, I mean of Vasudev Sattva. But they don't understand who Vasudev is. So it's not, they don't leave the material world really. The soul may be outside the universe and floating in the Brahman if they make it there. But the difficulty comes is that then they don't understand their position. So when they think, when they start to, you can't suppress the nature of the soul for long. That's what this whole treatise basically is about, is what is the Dharma or nature of the soul. And so it can't be suppressed. So if they suppress it by only accepting this, the sat part, the eternality part, then at some point the chit and ananda is going to come up because it's the nature of the soul. You know, it may take unlimited time, but for someone on the Brahman platform, it's not a long time. You know, how long can you sit in the corner? Not long. For an ant, that may seem very long, or for a bacteria, it may seem like an eternity. But for you, it's just some minutes, some time. You know, so then they will think of the material world. So that means the consciousness never really left the material world. They shut it off, that's all. Like that. That's why, that's the interesting thing, is they don't really get out of the material world. Though the soul may be out, but because you are where your consciousness is. You know, therefore you're in the material world, if you're conscious of Krishna, you're not in the material world, you're in the spiritual world. So even though they're in the Brahman, which is technically within the spiritual sky, but they haven't entered the spiritual planets, but their consciousness is still, I am the controller and the enjoyer. Right? So therefore they haven't actually left the material world. You understand? Okay.
I was trying to understand the nature and the implications that we're talking about, the causal body. Is that just a result of the soul's desiring?
Yeah. It's the consciousness. Basically, you know, when we talk about consciousness, that's the causal body.
So
like that means the basic, the foundation of it. So it means it's either I am servant or I am Lord. That's the only choices in that platform. You know? So but it's general, it's not specific. So then the subtle body, you know, the mind, intelligence and ego, that's specific. The mind has specific ways it wants to enjoy and control. And therefore it develops this certain kind of intelligence, certain senses, certain body around all that, and then you get the gross. So the spiritual realm is you want to serve Krishna. Then within that, then the specifics is then the desire to serve in a particular way, a particular rasa. That then creates the spiritual body. You understand? So there is a subtler point of the polluted consciousness. That's why Prabhupada says there's no need to change anything else. You just change the consciousness and you've already accomplished it. The other things will follow. Right? Because of your consciousness, then we get the subtle body, then we have this, the gross body. It just followed. And in the spiritual realm, when you have the desire to serve Krishna, and that spiritual body manifests. You know, that's that Brahma Samhita verse, Yam Kama Krodha Sahajapranya. Right? So it manifests. So therefore you don't have to change anything else. You change the consciousness. The other things will automatically change. Some people take it as that you don't have to change means you mean there's no need at all to change. But it's okay if you've completely changed the consciousness. But main thing is you work on the consciousness, naturally you change your other activities to match the consciousness in the stage of sadhana. Once you reach perfection, perfection meaning liberation, then there's no need of these, this lower state. Then one simply focuses on developing love for Krishna. Like that. But we don't work on the principle of separating it into two separate processes. I will focus on getting to the Brahman. Then once I'm in the Brahman, then I'll focus on developing love for Krishna. Because one is that process takes forever. It takes millions. You can't say how long it can take, whether you'll even get to the Brahman. You know, saying the yogis, they drew the respiration for millions of lifetimes. It doesn't stay, you know, for a long time or many hours a day or for, a few lifetimes, or hundreds, thousands, it's millions. So that means you'd be a karmi for millions and you get sick of that and become a jnani for millions and sick of that and become a yogi for millions and get sick of that and become a karmi again for millions. Just like that. So it's not accepted as a good path. It's elevating, but it's not really efficient. You know? Because it's like, if you're shooting for something really high, maybe you'll get something a little less. You know, what's a little less will come easy. Right? So you have to keep endeavoring for what's high. So if you're endeavoring for prema, liberation comes easy. Like that. But if you endeavor for liberation, then maybe you'll get to the, you know, upper planets. You know, tapa, jhana, mahar, satya, like that. If you're endeavoring for there, maybe you'll get to, you know, that's why you always have to. Prabhupada always gave the example, shoot the rhinoceros. You try for the top, and if you can get it, great. And if you can't, then everybody will say, you know. But it's the nature of the soul. So we don't separate them. We keep them as one process. So the we're trying to get to the platform of prema, but at the same time, we're using the tools of liberation to get rid of our material attachment. So we're simultaneously cultivating those things that will develop into prema, mature into prema. At the same time as we're cultivating those things that remove material contamination. So that's, we're doing both at the same time.
What do you mean by that? That
material
contamination?
That means engaging the you know, physical body in activities suitable for its nature. Physical and subtle body in activities suitable for its nature. Without attachment. Naishkarma. Like that. So that is Nishkam Karma Yoga. It frees us from the material contamination. But it itself doesn't give us prema. You understand? Performing your duties as a brahmachari or a grihastha sannyasi perfectly without any attachment will never give you prema. But by doing that, it will elevate you to the platform of liberation, towards that direction. It will get you liberation, but it can't get you prema. What gets you prema is doing something to please Krishna. Right? But the problem comes is, therefore we perform those activities of naishkarma to please Krishna. So the act of doing them to please Krishna, that's the devotion. That's what then snowballs into prema. So there's two things happening at once, and at one point the lower one is left off. It'll be done as example for others, but it's not needed once one comes to the Brahma-Buddha platform. So this is a very subtle thing, that two things are going on at once. That's the whole point of developing that love for Krishna. Because the thing is, in the spiritual realm, they want to serve Krishna. They have a spiritual form. They don't have material attachments, so they just do it. So the activity itself is prema. Their prema you know, whatever they're doing, whatever they're saying, every action is all based on prema, love for Krishna, attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna, desire to please Krishna. But in the material world, then everything's based on a conditioned nature. The modes of nature that affect our gross and subtle body, that's what we're going to work in. That's just the way it is. The body is going to move the way it is. It's not that, you know, today I, you know, have one body, and then when I take up devotional service, it won't move in the same way. You know, it's still moving the same way. It may become more refined, more you know, like here, regal. It may become more developed that you see all good qualities. But those are symptoms that something else is going on. Like that. You know, if you have some water and it's cold and then you start to see that it starts to steam, you know, then you can understand that there's something else happening that's making it hot. Like that. But because water itself is spun by nature hot, something else has to make it. Water is wet. Right? Like that. So when we start seeing these other qualities, there's some qualities like this humility and all those things like that. But if we see, you know, gentle movements, gentle behavior, those are just means that the body has become more refined. But why has it become more refined? Because the soul is engaged in devotional service. So because they're developing the actual nature of the soul, that humility, that tolerance, that so then because of these things, then you see that those manifest in the body, because what's in the mind will manifest in the body. So it's a very subtle point, is that it's not a necessity to distinguish, because the activity done to please Krishna is as good as Krishna, because it's engaged in Krishna's service. But at the same time, is what is the quality of what it's made out of? That's another thing. Right? So all this study of the two is simply there so that we are aware of what this, the gross, subtle, and our consciousness. We become aware of if there's any motives. That's why it says unalloyed. You know, so. There's unmotivated.
Uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted, because if it's interrupted, means there's something else. That means we've forgotten Krishna. So if it's uninterrupted, then means we're always remembering Krishna. And unmotivated, we're not asking something for Krishna. It means Kamsa was also always thinking of Krishna, so it was uninterrupted. Right? But it wasn't favorable. It wasn't unmotivated. Like that. So we can see what's behind. That's therefore we check. And then we look at the quality of what we're dealing with. Okay, we just did an activity. And we did it, you know, devotional service for Krishna under the direction of Shastras. But then we can study that and see, oh, why did I do that? Was it simply because the Shastra said it should be done, so it was out of duty? Was it simply because it's pleasing to Krishna? Or was, yes, I should, you know, sit nicely, and, you know, I should sit in front of the deities with full attention, sitting nicely, chanting well, articulating very nicely, all that. Now, did I do that because that's what you're supposed to do, and because Krishna said you're supposed to do that, I want to please him, so as Guru and Krishna said to do this, I'm doing this for their happiness? Or it was that, you know, everybody else would see, oh, what a, you know, very, you know, everybody else is slouched in there and falling asleep and just sitting very pukka and, you know, like a big yogi, and then they'll think, oh, what an advanced devotee. You know, you have one, in other words, one can, by these tools, one can see, is that what's going on? And if it's not, then fine, and that's good. But that's why they're there, because one can get subtler and subtler. One has to get down to the point of just control and enjoy, like that. That's the symptoms of that we're not taking the mood of servant. Means servant means you know, non-envious, right? You always hear, devotee is non-envious. So what does that mean? He said the first thing is he's not envious of God, and he's not envious of himself, right?
Well, so in every second we have the choice of being the master or the servant. In every activity, in every thought. Like you were saying, there's only two choices. So every second we have this choice.
Means the only reason we're in the material world is because we want to be here. So the difficulty is not getting out of the material world. Means getting out of the material world and developing love for Krishna. Those are the most natural thing for the living entity. He doesn't belong here, so therefore getting out of here is very natural. And developing love for Krishna, that is his natural proclivity. That's the nature of the soul, is to have love. You always have attachment or an attraction to your source. So therefore it's the nature of the soul. And being Satchitananda, therefore, they're always looking for happiness, which comes in relationship. So it's very natural to be in that kind of mood with Krishna. But what happens is that we choose not to be. So the difficulty is giving up the desire to want to be God. That's the difficulty. If that's given up, then in a moment it's over. We see Maharaj Kadbhanga in a moment surrender. So that's how quick it can be. A moment, 1/11th of a second, just how fast the mind can move. That's it, finish. That's how it can be. So the reason we're here, the reason that we have difficulty, is because we actually want it. Maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, that's the thing. So the whole process is, as one advances, one becomes more and more aware of one's subconscious motives. That's the whole point. So therefore, to whatever degree that one is capable, one tries to understand and contemplate and understand why one is doing what one is doing. But one has to do that under authority and in the process of service. Otherwise one will get bogged down with that and waste one's time. Right? Because the point is, if you don't get a result right away, it's something's wrong. Because it's an efficient process. So therefore, it's like realization comes when there's knowledge and practice. So if you only have knowledge and no practice, you can go on with knowledge for unlimited time and you won't get the realization. So one may say, well, I have to think about it more, but actually no, you have to do some practice, some service. Then you do the service, it'll come. And therefore the point Mataji made in the beginning, quoting Prabhupada, this Gita is not for armchair speculators. Because they just sit in a chair and speculate. They have so much knowledge. But they speculate because they don't do. Therefore, they don't really understand. They don't have realization. Many times in the modern context, understanding is taken as realization. No, it's a different thing. You have knowledge. That's one thing. When you understand the knowledge, that's understanding. Realization is another thing. That only comes from application. It can't come otherwise. The maximum non-practice can do is give you understanding. Right? So that means you have the knowledge. But until you practice it, you can't get realization. So realization is what changes the character. Realization is what changes your values, your focus, your motives. Like that. So therefore there must be a balance. That's why one has to keep oneself busy. Always keep oneself busy. And then, according to one's position, that busyness may be different. One person is reading or washing the pots, another person is studying. You see that it may be whatever it takes, according to one's conditioned nature, and according to one's level of realization. In the beginning, then there's more just engaging the conditioned nature, and as time goes, it's more applying the devotional process. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so it's a very subtle thing between these two. Is they are non-different, but they are different. Means the tools of liberation are different from devotional service. But at the same time, it's because they're engaged in devotional service, they become devotional service. They become Krishnaized or spiritualized.
So the essential difference is one is done in Krishna consciousness and one in consciousness, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Means Krishna consciousness can be done without them. And it'll be spiritual.
I mean, actually, in a state of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I'm just going to make a few. Yeah. Then, so you can perform the spiritual activities, and they'll give a spiritual result. You can perform pious activities, they'll give a pious result. But, you know, then one's spiritual, one's material. But performing pious activities that is done in pursuance of spiritual activities, like that, or performing spiritual activities using the material pious activities as the medium, gives a spiritual result. It purifies the material and it develops the spiritual. So it's actually that's the medium. But because the two are opposite each other, we're not used to it. It's something that the living entity in the material world can't remember doing. It's even though it's natural, the living entity has become like perverse. So what is actually the nature, they can't understand is the nature. So that's the difficulty with this point, is that we're used to karma means I do an activity because I want the result. And if I don't want a material result, I don't perform any activities. That's impersonalism. So this we can understand like this. You know, we've done it, you know, unlimited lifetimes for unlimited time. So these two fields we know very well. But devotional, the process of devotional service is combining both of these. That's totally ununderstandable. We're performing an activity, but with no material purpose. You know, it's like, why would you perform an activity if you don't get a result? Everything has to get a result. Right? No one does anything without a desire for results. So I'm performing a material activity, but not for any result. So that's weird. And I'm taking up the transcendental consciousness, but I'm performing pious activities. I should just sit and just, you know, meditate on Brahman. So this combination is totally foreign to our, you know, present consciousness. Therefore, it becomes very difficult to understand what is Dharma, what is religion. Right? Artha, everyone understands. Kama, everyone understands. Moksha, everyone understands. Dharma, if it's going to get us artha or moksha, that we understand.
Right.
Huh?
This is not the real.
But to perform dharma, to get prema, by going through the door of moksha, that we're not used to. You know, this means we perform dharma for artha, right? And then with artha, then we enjoy it. Then we get sick of that, then we take up moksha. And we don't perform the activities of dharma. Right? We just perform the activities of moksha. We're being asked to perform the activities of dharma, but not for artha and kama, not even for moksha. Because dharma will get you, you will go either way.
Yeah, then it's going for the transcendental. So that's what's just totally, we're not used to it, because that's the constitutional nature. And we're so adjusted with conditional nature that we're not used to it. Therefore, it becomes, you know, so many things we can understand, but this one thing becomes that is so hard to grasp. You know, is how we will perform the what would be considered the dharmic activities, but at the same time as they're not being done for dharma, they're being done as a medium of devotional service. So therefore, those angas of dharma that aren't useful for bhakti are just dropped. There's no loss. That's the thing. Well, someone who's doing bhakti, then all the benefits that you would get from charity, austerity, you know, sacrifice, study of the Vedas, you know, anything you get from bhakti. But we don't have bhakti, so we have to use something, right? We have to use some body. The only body we have is this material body. Right? We have to do some activity. All we have is material things to work with. So therefore, we use this body, those things, in service to the Lord. Because karma and jnana are expansions, are perversions of bhakti. So whatever is in them is already contained in bhakti. It means the tree reflected in the water. It means the real tree contains whatever the tree in the water has, but way beyond. Right? But we think, well, how will bhakti give us those things? Because I'm not performing, you know, if I perform the activity, I should get something material, or I should give it up. Or that's the thing. The whole thing is just adjusting the consciousness to actually accept the process, and the process is simple.
Activity connected to Krishna.
Yeah, it's just chant Hare Krishna. That's it. The whole thing is to get us to the point where we just chant Hare Krishna.
That means we have to get us a middle platform.
So
what you're describing is the
Sankalpa Vikalpa. Yeah, like that. So, because we've been doing it since time immemorial, then it's expected it will take a little time, you know. But it's not a lot of time. Sometimes they always, it takes so long. I've been a devotee for 30 years. What's 30 years compared to unlimited lifetimes of Lord Brahma? Right? One lifetime of Brahma is, you know, 311 trillion years. Right? And we're talking about, you know, which means trillion is, means how many zeros? It means you got three, huh? So one lifetime is, you know, 10 to the 12th power, right? And we're talking about 10 to the first, you know. And here, you know, and here we're putting a 3 in here, so 3, 3 times 10 to the first, or 3 times 10 to the 12th. You know, and that's one lifetime of Brahma. And it's, you know, it's maybe, but it's doubtful that it's one lifetime of Brahma. You know, you don't get the title Nitya Bhada for one lifetime of Brahma. You know, that's, you know, you get it for so many you can't even count them. So then how many years is that? It's, you know, hundreds, you know, 10 to the hundreds, or thousands, or millions, who knows how long it's been. And always saying, so 30 years, what's 30 years? Nothing. So the whole point is just getting it to agree. It's just like when you have a big nightmare, really bad nightmare, and you wake up. When you wake up for some time, you still think the nightmare is going on. You can, even though you're seeing everything, you know you're awake, you still see whatever was there in your nightmare, within the mind. But it's just the mind, it's not there. It was never there in the first place. So in the sleeping state, we think it's there, but it's just been dreamt up. And in the wake, in the process of awakening, we still think it's there, but it's not at all. So that's what takes the time, is to adjust to, I don't have to do this. I don't have to be a material conscious. I don't have to be motivated. I don't have to, you know, be trying to get profit and gain and control and everything that I do. You know, I don't have to. There's no need. I just have to say, and I can give it up and I will still be happy.
Because there's this whole thing of gain.
And there isn't a possible only to give it up and be happy when you have a relationship with Krishna. There's no taste coming from the relationship.
Yeah. So that's the other side. Is that means we're reluctant to give it up until this. So therefore, it's a gradual process. You do something, it's given up a little bit, then you're able to appreciate, and you performed, so you're able to appreciate the higher modes rather than the lower modes. And at the same time, as you perform service to Krishna, and that has developed spiritual development taste. And so then we're able to compare that, yes, this taste is better. So it's like we're getting a pious life is better than a saintly life is better than a life of nonsense. Same time as the devotional taste is better than the saintly life. And so as that grows, so that's why it says prema is mature faith. Because you have complete faith that serving Krishna is the perfection. That's perfection. Otherwise, perfection means getting out of the material world. You know, but perfection for us means to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So you have to keep going. So that we're so fixed on here, it just takes time for us to just adjust that, yes, I can be happy and I can do it. The conditioned nature needs it. I don't need it. So then the natural thing is since I don't need it, why I should deal with it? But the conditioned nature is conditioned nature. It's not us. It's just modes of nature that just act. Right? It's just like you have a plant. You don't have to think I am the plant to water the plant and keep it in the sun. No, you just know plants like sun and water. Right? And if you give that, the plant grows. Then what has it got to do with you? Nothing. Right? But if the plant's in your care, you have to take care of it. So same way, this body and this mind and intelligence and senses, they require certain kinds of dealing. So therefore, it's given to them. But it's given only how much they need. The plant only gets so much water. It only gets so much sun. You know, it doesn't get more, it doesn't get less. So it just gets just what it needs. And therefore, then one can deal with it. That is the aspect of the properly performing the activities of sadhana bhakti. As you see that I have a particular body, it needs this. It needs this much prasad, so I give it that much prasad. I don't give it more. I don't give it less. So then it needs this much sleep, it needs this much, you know, engagement in intellectual activities, it needs this much engagement in practical activities, it needs, you know, this and that. But it's done in a detached way. It just has to be done. That's just the way it is. But our goal is something else. Since we have it, we have to deal with it. Then we deal with it. We take care of it. You know, you have a house, you have, you have to take care of it. You know, it has to be painted, it has to be plastered, it has to be, you know, clean, it's just done. So that's the whole thing of this unattached obligatory work. This is what you know, Krishna's, you know, just how you say it, just keeps repeating and driving this point in the end of the second chapter. And probably in the purport, just constantly says, unmotivated obligatory work. You're doing it just because you're supposed to do it, and that's it. You're not doing it because you'll get something from it. Right? You're doing it because it's to be done. And why is it to be done? Because it's what pleases Krishna. Krishna comes from the material world, he has nothing to do, but he does something. So that means he's doing obligatory work without attachment. Right? That's why it's said, what is it? Paritranaya sadhanam. Yeah, so the first is he's come to associate with the devotees. That he likes. Getting rid of the demons, that's his job. As God, he's got to make the material world work. So he performs his obligatory duties without attachment. Right? Because if the demons aren't kept down, then the pious souls won't go, don't have a chance to go from piety to devotion. So you have to get, you have to keep down the demoniac element so those people can cross. Otherwise the demons will turn them into demons and then they don't care for God. There is no rasa.
Isn't that for the devotees, naskam kamyoga is basically like Prabhupada talks a lot more about puddha yoga.
It's the same thing.
And he develops it further in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he explains that it means that we have Krishna as the goal, as well as our work for his satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an emphasis of terms. Mm-hmm. Nishkam karma yoga. Mm-hmm. So buddhi yoga means that the emphasis is on the yoga aspect. Mm-hmm. And your understanding how nishkam karma works. Right? Someone could perform nishkam karma without actually understanding. So then it's not really buddhi yoga. You know? It's just like someone's doing something. And then someone's doing something, you know? You know, it's like someone's cooking. Okay, they have something in the pot and they're pushing it around and it's not. And then somebody's cooking. You know what I'm saying? One of those, one just does and they don't know why it works, and the other one knows why it works. And so therefore you see the result is also very... You know, you get something edible, but the one person's more edible. Like that. So it's the Kanista will emphasize the karma, you know, nishkam karma yoga, right? You know, the Madhyama in the beginning stage is the nishkam karma yoga, right? And then when you get to the platform, the buddhi yoga, then it's nishkam karma yoga. Does that make some sense? It's the same thing. But the thing is it's just like you explain something, if it's not understood, then you explain it from many different angles. So sometimes it's thought that it's something totally different. But it's actually the same thing. You know? And then sometimes then devotees will go, well, that's karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti, and so they throw it out. But where's the alternative? It means the alternative is prema bhakti. So if you can perform prema bhakti, then why do something less? Of course, it would be foolish. But since we're not able to, the only option open to us is karma misra and jnana misra, but it's bhakti. So the point is our emphasis on the emphasis is on the bhakti or on the karma misra. Or on the bhakti or the jnana misra. So that's the difference. Is someone who's more advanced, it's on the bhakti. That's called a pure devotee. And if it's on the karma or the jnana, then that's called a mixed devotee.
So for all this to work, the person that's training would have to be really expert in determining how to balance it. Like what Prabhupada calls swadhamma, the two names keeping on track.
That's why one has to stick to the charya. You know, so all this, you know, bouncing around the universe, you know, from one acharya to the next, may not get, you know, a great... You could put a bookmark and just close it. Means you went to... You know how you say? So it's a very, it's a delicate thing. It's just one thing. But the point is because it has so many manifold aspects, it's described from so many different angles. And it appears that those different angles are actually different. But they're not, they're the one thing. Like that. They're one thing, but it's just understanding what that means. So it's just like we want to take the bhakti aspect. So then we have to find what is bhakti? You know? What is bhakti? What actually is favorable? What is proper? This, that. Therefore, nectar devotion gets into all those technical details. And then so many books then give details of those details. You know, one verse by Rupa Goswami becomes a whole book by another acharya to explain it. You know? And then that intellectual understanding of seeing how everything works and functions so that you're in knowledge when you're doing it, then that's the whole system of jnana. You know, so, you know, there your Vedanta and all these different things and how, you know, the Sambandha is like, what is the soul? What is God? What is the material world? How they relate? God, material world, God, I mean, God, material world, God, the soul, the material, soul, God. Like this, how does that work? That's all the technicalities. So that's a vast ocean. Vedanta Sutra explains that. So many different things explain that. You know, Bhagavad Gita is like the essence of that. Like that. And then there's the karma aspect. So is that you have the body, it has a nature. What is that nature? So that the Dharma Shastras tell. They tell this kind of body, okay, that's this thing, you know, you're 5 years old and this is the nature. So therefore you need this. You know, your body is 10 years old and you need like this. It's 50 years old, you need like this. You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? If you have an intellectual nature, then you have to do these activities. You have an administrative nature, you do these activities. You have a mercantile nature, you should do these activities. It means, in other words, choosing what activities the body should do for God. It doesn't matter which ones it is. That's the beauty of it. It means it doesn't matter if one's a Brahmin or a Shudra. It's just you take the nature of a Brahmin and use it for Krishna. That's Nishkam Karma Yoga. You take the nature of a Shudra and use that for Krishna. That's Nishkam Karma Yoga. So that's there. So therefore, then there's the study of Dharma Shastras, studies of Vedanta, studies of all these other things, just so we can, they're just different angles of the Lord, of the whole process. So when everything is perfectly put together in one package, then you get the Bhagavatam. And even that you're going through, that means 10th canto. And then we see that, you know, the first cantos are establishing just how to come to that pure platform. And then after that, then you start seeing the pure platform. Then you see the perfection of that pure platform in that prema. So all it is the taking these elements out so that you can understand that people tend to, when they study it separately, they give it its own identity. But it doesn't have a separate identity. It's actually just part of the whole thing. Therefore it has such a big long name, Nishkam Karma Yoga. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's a mix of karma and jnana being done for the purpose of bhakti. Therefore it's called bhakti. But if you just take jnana for its own, it's called jnana. You take karma, it's called karma. But when you do bhakti, it's done on the platform. Bhakti starts at prema. That's all. So below that, then means you're having to take conditioned nature. Then you have the intellectual aspects of understanding so you can pull yourself out of material nature, at least get that determination to do it. The activities won't change. You know? The karmi is taking his bath in the morning. The jnani is also taking his bath. But the karmi, then after his bath, will perform activities that will give food a result, where the jnani won't. Mm. But he'll engage in jnana, while the other will engage in karma. Mm. So the basic culture won't change. Like that. It won't change. Therefore, the process is the same. The process of the jnanis is the same as what will follow. The process of the karmas is the same as what will follow. The process of the Pancharatra then is taking the perfection, the essence of those out. It means, what is in karma that is favorable for devotional services in Pancharatra? What is in jnana that is favorable for devotional services in Pancharatra? And the rest of it is just left, because that's for the purpose of going to Brahman as a goal, or going to the heavenly planets as a goal. If that's not your goal, then you don't need all of their paraphernalia. You know, so you just take what is necessary, and that's put in Pancharatra, the first cult, it's known as Ekayana. It's just focused on the Lord. It's not branched. It's a Vyapasayaknika. Mm-hmm. Like that. It's focused. Like that.
So then that becomes, and then that's your sadhana. And then from that, then you start to develop that spontaneous mood, though the pancharatric process still remains. But now it's being done instead of just being done because it has to be done. Now it's being done because you want to do it. You know, and then that will mature into then bhava dupaya. So it becomes, it's a very, very well thought out process.
Which all depends on developing a relationship with Krishna. To the extent that we can do that to us, and we can do it spontaneously.
Yeah. That's why the focus must always be Krishna. That's why you see it's always thrown in. Krishna doesn't leave it at just perform your duties without attachment. You know? Perform your duties without attachment, then that cuts the karma. In knowledge, you know, because it's real knowledge that cuts the jnana for me. So it's done in devotion. So that's the bhakti. But because doing it without attachment and in knowledge are favorable for getting out of the material world and thus developing bhakti, it's also counted as bhakti. Right? Yes.
All right. In this case, the sannyasi, he's not trying to develop a relationship with Krishna, he's surrendering to the Vaishnava.
Yeah, he knows that that's the perfection. He knows, because the principles are the same. It means the devotional principle, what is there is the devotional principles of bhakti then have been perverted to get people karma, the results of karma, the results of jnana. Therefore, the essence of the path of karma and the essence of the path of jnana and the essence of the path of bhakti are the same. Right? If you want to be a good karmi, you have to be non-violent. If you want to be a good jnani, you have to be non-violent. If you want to become a good devotee, you have to be non-violent. But it's seen in different levels. You know? It means, of course, the devotee, it means the karmi sees it as physically don't bother anybody. Right? The jnani sees it subtler, on the subtle platform, don't bother anybody. You know? Because for the karmi, as long as he performed the activity properly, even though his mentality wasn't right, it's okay. The ritual is done. For the jnani, then it's more understanding the nature of the intelligence in the mind. So then, therefore, the attitude must be right. But for the devotee, non-violence means understanding that the soul is servant of God. So therefore you give up the violence of the violence against the soul that they are God, that they think they're God. That's violence. As if the soul is acting in a way that they think they're God, then that's violence. Therefore it always, you get the thing where the killer of the soul, this person is the killer of the soul, because they pull back, you know, and become, you know, very conscious of all these things, but then they say the soul's God. So then they kill themselves in that way. So this is non-violence to yourself and also non-violence to, you know, just to God and his associates. You know, we should serve rather than make trouble. So it takes on a different meaning, but the principle will be the same. You will see that there will be non-violence to living entities. You know, you won't physically bother them or emotionally bother them. Like that. So it's a very. So the principle is the same all the way down. Just its root in bhakti to be a karmi, then you want to think that you're God. Right? Because you want to control and enjoy. To be a jnani, you must think you're God. But to be a bhakta, then you can't think that. So the same principle changes. So their understanding, you have to approach someone who knows the field. That's a process of karma and jnana also. But now he understands there's something higher. He doesn't know what it is. But he wants it. So he knows that principle still works. I approach somebody who has that, knows that, they can give it.
These other Vaishnavas shedding tears and making melody as it.
Yeah, like that.
If you miss it.
He wasn't only shedding tears, but he was also, he became absorbed himself with the name of Chaitanya.
Yeah, yeah.
So it had an immediate effect on him also.
Yeah, because he received it from a proper source and received it in a proper mood. You see, because he's very pious, he didn't react in a bad way. He wasn't sitting there and laughing at them and joking like that. But the amazing thing about the holy name, because the other processes are like that. If you approach them in that mood, humble mood, you know, then meditation, yajna, and the regulations of deity worship work. If you don't have the right attitude, they do not work. But the holy name, even if you have the wrong attitude, it will work. You won't get prema. You know, the guy on the corner who's, you know, joking and laughing at the devotees going by and going, hey, Hare Krishna, you know, and he's getting benefit, and all his goofy friends who are also laughing are getting benefit from his chanting. But they're not going to get prema on that platform of chanting. But they're going to advance. They've done service. So that's the amazing thing of the name. Is that so? We see is he has a proper attitude, and plus he's, you know, heard from proper source this that. Therefore, it had such a powerful effect. Okay, so we should stop here for today. So, should we probably pause?
Yeah.